The following episode of Annals on Call is brought to you by Annals of Internal Medicine. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and participants during this episode are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the American College of Physicians, the editors of Annals of Internal Medicine, or the institutions that the speakers are affiliated with unless so identified. All relevant financial relationships have been mitigated. Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall.
And they're on a submaximal dose of a medication, and we have to decide whether we should increase to the maximum dose or whether we should consider switching to a different, more potent medication.
Welcome to Annals on Call, a podcast based upon articles from the Annals of Internal Medicine, in which we discuss the implications of the article for you, the listener. This is Dr. Bob Centaur. I'm Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama at Birmingham and former Chair of the Board of Regents for the American College of Physicians.
This episode of Annals on Call features an article titled Comparison of Dose Escalation versus Switching to Tirzepatide Among People with Type 2 Diabetes Inadequately Controlled on Lower Doses of Dulaglutide, a Randomized Clinical Trial. Joining us on the podcast is the first author of the paper, Dr. Leanna Billings, who is an endocrinologist at North Shore Hospital with major interest in the management of diabetes. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Leanna, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I really enjoyed learning about your study first at the ACP annual meeting and then reading the article because it addresses a very, very interesting question. So maybe you could start by telling us the clinical question that you had in mind when you designed the study and talk about the study.
Yes, I'm happy to. Thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to getting to discuss this very exciting study. So the clinical question that this was aimed to address is a pretty common scenario we come across during clinical care, where we're with a patient who may have uncontrolled blood glucose, and they're on a submaximal dose of a medication, and we have to decide at that point whether we should increase to the maximum dose or whether we should consider switching to a different, more potent medication. And so the scenario we addressed here in the study was examining whether people on submaximal doses of dulaglutide would benefit more from with switching to tirzepatide and up titrating to a maximal dose or continuing on to titrate up to the maximum dose of dulaglutide.
For the people who don't keep track of generic names, tirzepatide is the way I say it, which is probably wrong.
I say tirzepatide.
Okay, good. So we get tirzepatide. And what do most patients know it by?
So tirzepatide, the brand name in diabetes, would be referred to as Mounjaro. And dulaglutide, the brand name in diabetes, would be Trulicity.
And tirzepatide also has an indication for weight loss, and they have a different name for it, right? Isn't that right?
That's right. The brand name for the weight loss medication or version of tirzepatide is Zepbound.
Okay, so now everybody knows exactly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I think it's only fair for you to disclose the funding source for the primary funding source and then describe the basics of the study.
So the primary funding source for this study is coming from Lilly, the company that makes tirzepatide and dulaglutide. And I guess, do you want me to go into the study design?
Yeah.
Okay. So the study enrolled adults, so 18 and older, and they had an A1C between 7, so inclusive of 7, to 9.5%. They had to have been on a stable dose of either 0.75 or 1.5, so a submaximal dose of dulaglutide, and they could have been on up to 3 oral anti-hypoglycemic medications, and those doses had to be stable for at least in 6 months. So they were then included in the study. They had type 2 diabetes, of course, and they were randomized to either the dulaglutide arm, where they were up titrated up to a maximum dose of 4.5 or the maximally tolerated dose, or they were randomly assigned to stop their dulaglutide and switch over to tirzepatide and then titrate that medication up to its maximum dose of 15 milligrams or the dose that they tolerated the most. And this is a 40-week study.
Okay, I'm always intrigued with table one because table one tells us who's in the study. Because for me to understand how to use the information from a study, it's nice to know who the patient population is. So if you could just give a rough idea of what the patient population here is.
Yeah, so table one shows the characteristics of the patients in that were divided between the two groups, so the tirzepatide group and the dulaglutide group. And they're very well matched. The general patient, or kind of the average patient that we saw in this trial, is pretty similar to patients we see in our clinical setting. On average, they were 50, around 58 years old. They had a BMI around 34. Had had a decent duration of diabetes, a little over 10 years. So on average, it was 11 years. And their average A1C coming into the study was 7.8%. They generally took about one to two oral antihypoglycemic agents in addition to the dulaglutide dose that they were required to be on in order to enroll in the study.
So in my brief look at it, I thought it was very interesting that it was almost even men and women.
Yeah, in the end, we had, let's see, yeah, right around 50% in both groups.
And you had a lot of different countries involved in this study. It's not just a US study.
Yeah, it wasn't. And also, so this study was conducted in the US. Our site is in the US, but it was also studied in Mexico, Belgium, Germany, and Romania.
Which to me is very interesting. The endpoints that you had, if I remember right, the primary endpoint was hemoglobin A1C, since everybody's interested in weight loss these days.
Yeah, exactly. The primary outcome was change in A1C, and then we looked at weight loss as well. And then we looked at some composite outcomes that we could discuss in a little more detail that are kind of more clinically relevant.
So share those with us now before we get to the results.
Oh, so the composite outcomes we looked at were an A1C less than 7%, or an A1C less than 6.5, or an A1C less than 5.7. And then we also looked at weight loss greater than 5, 10, and 15%.
Okay, those all sound like something that we need to know.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of, when you're thinking about how likely you are to get a certain percentage of weight loss in clinic, or your goal A1C, if you're coming from an 8.5 and you want to get to below 7, you want to make sure that your patient has a good chance of getting there. So it's nice to see some of these endpoints that are a little more clinically relevant.
Okay, so now it's time for the big reveal. What did the study show?
So the study showed, so as far as the primary outcome, the A1C reduction in the dulaglutide arm was on average 0.67%. And the A1C reduction in the tirzepatide arm was 1.4%. And so at the end of the trial, the average A1C in the dulaglutide arm was 7.1, and the average A1C in the tirzepatide arm was 6.2%. So very different, much more effective A1C lowering in the tirzepatide arm. And
Okay.
then as far as weight even, is more interesting. The people in the dulaglutide arm lost on average 3.6 kilograms, and the people in the tirzepatide arm lost on average 10.5 kilograms. So, very big difference as far as even weight loss when we switch to tirzepatide.
If my math is right, that's over 20 pounds.
Times 2.2.
Yeah. Okay, what about those other things you looked at, the number below 7, the number below 6.5?
Yeah, so for clinically relevant endpoints, so the 84% of the people in the tirzepatide arm were able to reach an A1C less than 7%, in contrast to 46% of the people in the dalaglutide arm. So a little less than half in the dalaglutide arm and more than 80% in the tirzepatide arm were able to reach our kind of standard clinical goal of less than 7%. And I think it's even more kind of exciting to look at some of the tighter glucose parameters. So if you look at less than 6.5, 73% of the people in the tirzepatide arm were able to attain this, and 22% in the dalaglutide arm. So you're nearly a 50% difference. And then if you look at even tighter control, less than 5.7, which would be considered a normal A1C value, not even prediabetes, you see that 2.4% in the dalaglutide were able to reach it, but 21%, a fifth of the people in the tirzepatide arm, were able to actually reach normal A1C levels. So then the same is true, as far as tirzepatide being stronger in weight loss, 82% were able to achieve over 5% weight loss compared to 37% in the dalaglutide arm. 58% were achieved a greater than 10% weight loss compared to only 6% in the dalaglutide arm. And then a nearly a third, so 29% of people in the tirzepatide arm were able to reach a weight loss of over 15% compared to less than 1% in the dalaglutide arm.
Okay, was there a cost to this? What about adverse effects?
Yeah, it's a good question. As we know that, nausea and GI related side effects are more common in these medicines, and so you might expect to have a little more side effect potentially, or GI side effect with a more potent medication. We saw that a little bit. We saw your nausea was reported at a 25% rate, so at some, or not rate, but a proportion. So at any point in the trial, 25% of people may have reported at some point having nausea. And that was compared to about 19% in the dalaglutide arm, so about a 6% difference. So not, substantially increased, but definitely a little higher reported in the tirzepatide arm. And the same is true with the other reported events like diarrhea, vomiting. Actually, diarrhea was a little higher in the tirzepatide arm, but actually vomiting was a little more often reported in the dalaglutide arm, interestingly enough. And I just want to note, with vomiting, the rates were pretty low anyway. So only 6.5% and 9.8% reported vomiting at any point in the trial, tirzepatide versus dalaglutide, respectively.
Did many patients have to leave the study because of adverse effects?
No, we did not have actually a very high withdrawal rate because of GI adverse events.
Great. So when someone asks you about this, what's your elevator speech? What did you learn that you want everybody else to know?
I think this study is really unique because, it's a very, the results very much apply to clinical practice. Whereas sometimes when we're running studies to examine a new medication that may just be compared to, say, a placebo, it's not always the case that we're running across in clinic. And even though a placebo-controlled step trial is maybe a gold standard as far as examining the efficacy of a medication, there's a lot of utility in these comparative studies where you're comparing to an active kind of other arm. And so having a study like comparing dalaglutide and tirzepatide has been extremely helpful in understanding how to approach certain clinical scenarios and actually have the evidence to back it up and not just kind of guess. So now I know when I come across a patient on submaximal doses of dalaglutide, and if in fact their A1C is not well controlled, I'm not going to wait and postpone their control for a couple months with potentially failing by just increasing dalaglutide. I'm going to switch them to tirzepatide because I know my chances of them reaching goal is much more likely in tirzepatide than in dalaglutide, according to the study. So I think that would be the main takeaway.
Do you think you could extrapolate this to semaglutide? Because
I
that
mean, as
seems to
far
be
as,
more popular these days.
yeah, unfortunately, we can't answer that question with this study. We may expect that someone on submaximal doses of dalaglutide may have more effective A1C lowering and weight loss with semaglutide, because we do know that it is more potent than dalaglutide. So I might expect the same results, but I don't have a switch study to provide evidence for that.
Do you see more people just going straight to tirzepatide and skipping over the GLP-1s and going straight to the GLP-1 plus GIP?
Yeah, I mean, I think our choice in clinic usually now is we're considering some of the more potent incretin-based therapies, so like semaglutide or tirzepatide. And yes, I do see a lot of people just going straight to tirzepatide now because or semaglutide because they want to start with the kind of the most advanced and the most potent medication. Sometimes it comes down to really insurance coverage on whether which one you're going to decide on. So, you know, there's lots of factors that can come into play. But yeah, we, you know, we're not, oftentimes we're not starting at dulaglutide necessarily now. We're starting with the later generation GLP-1 and GLP-1 GIP medications.
And apparently, we're soon to have a triple medication come out.
Yeah, and I haven't been involved in those studies, but I'm very excited to see those results.
Yeah, I recorded a podcast that looked at the weight loss in people without diabetes, and in the studies that were getting the triple put together, and I forget the name of it right now. It did even better than tirzepatide. So it'll be interesting to see. So
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up cost because that's this is a great drug, but it's pretty damn expensive.
Yeah.
So how often does it look like you can actually get patients to see that? I have friends who are on tirzepatide, and these are friends who can pay cash for it,
Yeah.
and they're very happy because they've lost all. I mean, I've One of my golfing buddies lost over 50 pounds.
Yeah.
He really looks like a new man, and he needed it because he has both heart disease and had some and was starting to have diabetes and doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah, you know, cost is always a factor. I mean, I feel like sometimes the too much time during our visits are spent on trying to figure out how to get someone a medication. So, you know, fortunately, there is more and more coverage of these medicines, especially in diabetes. I think that has really come a long way. That I find, you know, it's very infrequently that I have a patient who doesn't have coverage for these medicines for the indication of type 2 diabetes. For the indication of weight loss and obesity, it's much less coverage. That is where we have a lot more trouble getting patients the medications that we recommend because the coverage is, you know, really not sufficient. You know, some of the companies that produce these medications provide some out of pocket kind of programs that, you know, will cost around $500 a month. And that's not affordable probably to most people. So it's a step in the right direction, but may not be able to get it to everyone who needs it. So yeah, cost is a big concern.
I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but if you have obesity and, let's say, for example, sleep apnea, does that make it easier? Does that seem to make it easier to get the insurance companies to pay?
Well, tirzepatide has published a study that shows that it can help improve sleep apnea. So, yeah, I would think that the more often we're able to show that these medicines have other really exceptional and important impacts on health besides weight, but heart disease, kidney disease, sleep apnea, other comorbidities that are associated with increased weight. That's going to help us get it to patients who, you know, really, really can benefit not only from weight loss, but other conditions that they may have.
Well, I can't thank you enough for doing this study, and publishing it and talking with us about it. So thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now it's time for Bob's Pearls. This very interesting article looks at dose increase of a GLP-1 versus switching to GLP-1 with an additional GIP, that is dulaglutide versus tirzepatide. We could increase the GLP-1, or we could just go straight to the combination drug of the GLP-1 with the GIP. In this study, the tirzepatide was much better than increasing the dose of the GLP-1. That was true both for diabetes control and for weight loss. This study is interesting in that it does a comparison of two different medications for the same indication to figure out which one does better. This is unusual to have these kinds of studies, and it's very valuable. We hope that this has been useful for you in your practice. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast.
Information contained herein should never be used as a substitute for clinical judgment. For more episodes, links to CME and MOC, or to view disclosures, visit go.annals.org/oncall